Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I'm James Gilmore, the host. This episode number 258, and I've been to the dentist's. Joining me is Keith Andrew, who's also been to the dentist's.
Yeah, I'm not doing that, but...
You've expended all of your acting energy for episode, legendary episode 256.
That was the one time.
He had to be coaxed into that, boys and girls. There was like, I had to send him prep warning. And whenever I started recording my bit, whenever I put on the silly voice, he just cracked up for 15 minutes. It was like, he did that thing where I was like, all right, I'm going to start now. Right, I'll start now. And it's start. And
I'm like, get all the laughs out. I've got to get all the laughs out.
And I'm like, in your own time, darling. And he's like, you didn't say that. And he laughed for another 50 minutes. It took ages, I'm telling you.
Sometimes you sit and look at your life and you just laugh at the ridiculousness of the stuff you're doing, really.
Yeah, and then you have a little cry. Well, I actually have been to the dentist. Both Keith and I have on the same day. Like,
not the same one, though.
Not the same one or at the same time. But and actually, we were pretty much at the same time in
different
chairs having our faces drilled off. Mm. But it's all right. It wasn't that bad. I can still talk, and you can clearly still talk. I was expecting to like have half my face be completely asleep and lose the power of speech.
20 minutes ago, well, no, about half hour ago, it's only then it started to come back. I was still slurring.
Yeah, I'm not a big
you should have seen me try and eat noodles for lunch. That was a mistake because it just were falling out of my mouth.
I bet it was like an octopus fumbling over a ball, wasn't it?
I had to change my shirt. It went everywhere.
That's gross. I should probably point out that Peter Wellington's also here.
Well, hello.
Hello, welcome back, Peter Wellington. This is the first time you've been back in the new year.
In the new year, isn't it? Oh, I love the fact...
Banished from the internet, weren't you?
Well, I was banished from the... Finally, they banished me. The internet's Peter Wellington is back. I'm now in a... the reason I didn't have internet is I had to move a house. And
not 2 degrees to the west.
Yeah. And my internet service provider that will remain nameless, let's call them Chat. They decided to faff about a lot. So I couldn't get access to the internet. I was doing work in my library and all that. Not in my library.
In the library. East Wing.
That's right, yeah, the East Wing. Inside. Amazing. And it doesn't get Wi-Fi access. No, I had to do it in the Bristol Central Library. Wow. So I couldn't call in. But the exciting thing now is, one, I've set up a new microphone stand. So I look like a sort of semi-professional now. I have my own office, things will be nice and quiet. But also, every once in a while, the small child that lives next door with his parents wanders past my window, and I can just see him. And he looks in, and he looks direct, and he's got that childlike, like, arrogant slash innocence, where like he'll just like keep looking at you. You know, when you get to a certain age, at some point you don't look. You know, you look at things, then you look away because you realise you shouldn't be looking, and it's embarrassing. But before that age, you just look at things.
You just stare because you've never seen it before, and everything is new and wonderful.
So I'm peeking out the corner of my eye, and I can see it's a kid, and he's just like got his little face above.
He probably thinks you do radio or something.
He probably does. He probably thinks I'm the BBC.
Yeah, which I'm sure you are now. They moved buildings recently. I think it's downright suspicious that you've just moved as well.
Exactly.
You're probably chief commissioner of something.
Chief commissioner of internet fun times. I'm giddy to be back. I'm giddy to be back, so I will say something.
I can tell, and we're all glad to have you back. This is the first group reunion of 2014, and my word, do we have some news and stuff for your lovely listeners.
Do we?
First in the updates this week, Feed Me Oil 2 has got 15 more levels. I actually played this last week as part of a review thing, and it's actually quite good fun. It takes the first game where you're directing oil into the mouths of these gigantic mechanical creatures. This time, there's water involved. So when you try and fire the oil downwards through water, it kind of gets pushed back up again because of the whole buoyancy density thing. So it changes the dynamics of the game a bit, and it's really quite good fun. But if you have downloaded it, you've got 15 brand new levels to try right now, so that's fun for you. I don't know if this is still going to be active when the podcast goes live, but I'll mention it anyway. Joe Danger Infinity is currently available for 99 pence, which I think translates to about $1.49, I'd guess.
I think it does, yeah.
Yeah, it's been free that price for a couple of days. If you're lucky and you tune in on Friday, then it might still be available as that. It's a good game. It's more of the same, but it is a good thing because the first game was really good fun. Everything's been shrunk down to a miniature size, and he's jumping over bits of melon and, you know, tapping bees and all those other things that Joe Danger does on his bike. But it's fun, and that price is kind of a bargain. So, yeah, go for it. What else we got? Oh, yeah, this is cool. Black. It is a sort of touch swipe-based puzzle game in which you eliminate colored dots from a screen by drawing a little shape or line. So, for example, if you were to draw a straight line, a little dash across the left-hand side of the screen, and then you release your finger, and it kind of continues along the screen from left to right, snaking its way along. Equally, if you draw a little doodle, kind of a squiggle, and then take your finger off, it'll continue to squiggle along the screen like a snake. And you use that in order to kind of eliminate, you have to pass the line through different colored dots. It gets very, very tricky because you have to weave around other black dots that are there. It's really simple, very elegant, very clever. It was previously only available on iPad, but now it is out on iPhone. So you can download that right now. And that is a recommendation. We gave it, I think, a silver or gold award. It's really kind of clever and quirky and minimal and fun. You can get it for £1.99 or $2.99. Also, if you've got an Android phone, you could download RoboCop.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah. That came out last week for iPhone and was met with this much applause.
Yeah. And that was because that's because it works.
Yes.
That's because it is functional.
To be fair, like I said this last week, it's actually not as bad as
I thought you said nice things about it.
No, it's right.
I didn't say nice thing. I said it was as crap as I thought.
That's the thing. I've been doing the review for Pocket Gamer, and like at the end of it, I just kind of say spoilers. At the end of it, I just kind of say that it's left literally no impression on me whatsoever. Like it is so video game. It's just exactly what you think glue would do with the RoboCop license.
Yeah.
Like it, and it's fine. It's just literally I don't know who cares.
Probably no one, but I'm mentioning it anyway because it's off a film, and you know, kids like films and they like playing games that have something to do with the film, and you know, protect your lore and uphold your mum and all that. So yeah, out on Android now for free. Fill your boots. So late last year, everything went Telltale mad. As well as the success and return of The Walking Dead, the second season, Telltale announced that they were doing video game versions of the Game of Thrones, which sort of makes sense, and Borderlands, which sort of makes less sense, but is happening anyway. So clearly, they've got their plates full over there with all the different episodic content they're going to be releasing. The thing that they kind of didn't mention was when the hell the second episode of The Wolf Among Us was going to come out. Because they released that, I'm going to say September, October of 2013. And it was met with good reviews. We reviewed it and liked it. AppSpy reviewed it and liked it. But then we heard nothing. There was no second episode. There's supposed to be five, but there's been like months of absolute silence. That silence has now been broken. And it turns out the second episode will be coming in the first week of February. Now, I played it. Did anyone else play it or care?
I'm watching a video of it right now.
I liked it. If you liked The Walking Dead, it's exactly the same style, pretty much, same visual style and gameplay thing. But if you haven't played it, it's based around the Fables comic book series, in which it takes a film noir look at fairy tales, basically. So it's a city that's full of fairy tales, fairy tale characters, all of whom have been anthropomorphized into humans.
Oh, so it's a kids game.
No, it's got an awful lot of F-bombs in it.
What? You can't do that in a kid's game.
Mr. Toad from Wind in the Willows,
yeah,
is like this sleazy landlord guy who cusses his face off. That's the kind of tone of the game that we're talking about. He still looks like a frog. However, your main character, you play as Big B Wolf, right? Big Beowulf, be big bad. You see.
He's quite dashing, actually, isn't he?
He's a chiseled fellow.
It is a good series, actually, the comic book series.
I've not read it.
Oh, this is going to sound really condescending. It is the comic book series that every person who goes, reading comics is kooky, so I'm going to do that. It's the series that all of them love. like it's that and The Sandman.
Neil Gaiman thing, yeah.
Like it's like that sort of, in fact, actually it's quite like a lot of Neil Gaiman's realist fantasy, isn't it?
Well, it translates well onto iOS into a game form, because it's basically film noir style.
Yeah.
Which works really well when you got a voiceover doing that kind of like, oh, I'm a dark man, a dark world.
What's the voice acting like?
Sorry?
What's the voice acting like?
It's pretty strong. I mean, it's always mixed. You've always got a couple of duds in these things. But Telltale, since The Walking Dead, I guess, they've managed to attract a decent group of voice actors and maybe have a bit of a better budget to do it now as well. So it's pretty solid. It's pretty much exactly the same as The Walking Dead in terms of the way the game plays out. You're still, you know, hitting hotspots with your finger and answering multiple choice questions, and people will remember things. That thing you always have in Telltale games where you say something and they go, they'll remember that in the top right hand corner. All that stuff is still happening. It's just the fact that they're in this different world. And I like the world. It's hyper.
I want to play it now.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I think you'd like it. It's good. It's good looking, but I really like the sort of strong color palette they use. I mean, The Walking Dead is so green, gray, washed out. But this is a real, like, bam, it just pops off the screen. It looks fantastic on Retina display. So I'm going to play it. I like the first episode. And like I say, if you've bought the first episode, you've been waiting for months, then mark it in your calendar. First week of February, the second episode's coming your way. Another new thing that's coming a little bit sooner than February, Final Fantasy V is appearing on iOS today. Which is tomorrow as I speak now, but Friday if you're listening to it on Friday. So today, sort of, in the future. We mentioned Final Fantasy VI was coming our way, and I think it appeared over Christmas or something, did it? I never chased that up, actually.
Yeah, I think it's out now.
Yeah, you and I discussed it, and we were talking about the way that it looked, the way they've changed the visual stylings of it.
Yeah.
Kind of made it less pixel art and more rounded and, you know, adapted to Retina displays. They're doing the same thing, unsurprisingly, to Final Fantasy V. And I only mention it because we've been discussing it in the office today, and I've seen a bunch of people online bitching about it.
Oh my god, it looks it looks hideous.
Are you being serious or ironic?
I'm being genuinely serious.
Oh, okay, because Matt Dina has been taking the opposing stance of like everyone's being butthurt for no reason.
No, it. Oh my goodness me. there's a couple of different screenshots floating about, and one of them it looks like somebody's knocked something up in RPG Maker, and that is not what a chocobo looks like.
The chocobo, to totally be pronounced, looks funny as hell. It looks
duck
rubbish.
Is this the yellow duck?
That's the yellow duck, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot you were speaking video games for a moment.
I've lost. No idea what you were talking about there.
Yes, the little yellow duck in the middle of the big green forest. It totally doesn't look like a chocobo.
It completely jars with the portrait art as well.
Yeah, because they've got an image of the kind of traditional JRPG portrait art that they've got in the corner, the kind of anime-looking image. And no, it doesn't look like it's from the same game. It does look a bit weird. You see, this is interesting because a lot of people, including you now, Peter, have taken great offense to this new art.
I couldn't care less. I've got it on other devices. But like,
exactly.
Yeah, like that is not the look of the game. It doesn't capture the look of the game at all.
Well, I'm inclined to agree. I don't like the look of it. I'm not getting upset about it because I'm kind of used to it at this point, and that's what they do. They pretty up the graphics to what they assume people who have iPhones and iPads will like. And they're not catering to miserable 20-something, 30-something gits like us who actually had the game on their SNESs. And
aren't they, though?
Well, that's the thing. You would assume that changing the visuals in this way, they're trying to attract, a younger audience. Otherwise, they'd keep it all traditional and old school. Because we like that, don't we, us grumpy old bastards? We think that's kind of cool, and just how we remembered it back in the day when chicken tasted like chicken.
I don't know if Square Enix has got enough sense though to leave well alone. They're like George Lucas. Like these are classic games, and it's this idea that nobody wants to see any filthy pixels, dirty pixels. Get rid of those. You know, like. This is a game.
They that camp.
Oh, there it is. Look at these smooth lines there. Fabulous.
I wasn't trying to be camp. I was trying to be sort of energetic. That's really bad that my energy.
Like the idea that the Square Enix offices are populated entirely by people.
1970s stereotypical camp people.
Exactly.
Oh, amazing. I just don't think like. As I say, I can play it on different devices, and there's a decent enough port of it on. Well, it's all right. Port of it on PSP, and you could always emulate it. But what? Mm. Pocket Gamer does not endorse emulation in any way. But you know, I don't know. I just don't really know who this is catering to.
Keith, you're a visually minded chap. You like logos and whatnot. And I know this isn't your genre. You're not into Final Fantasy. But what do you think of it? Do you think it looks all right? Does it care?
No, it doesn't look very good. And there is a, you know, there's a definite appeal to how it. I know how these games used to look.
Sure.
And it's funny that you have lots of games that come out on phones these days that try to look. Like how these games used to look.
That's what I was thinking. It's
and
like
they have a game that looks like how those games used to look, and they've tried to make it look like, I don't know, a really bad cartoon sketch.
Exactly. It's... Like half of the indie developers in the world are emulating the look of Final Fantasy, these old 16-bit JRPGs. And here they go. They've got the real deal, and they gloss it up with all this smooth nonsense.
But I don't like that yellow duck either, I don't.
There used to be a video game where you could race those things.
I wonder what you could say.
It was amazing. As, the Chocobo, or Chocobo, has had such a storied history in video games. They are amazing. They're like...
I've had to write that word before. I must have played something that featured this, because I remember years ago having to look up what the hell this thing was. It wasn't some Java. Maybe I think I might have read a Final Fantasy on Java, actually.
I like the racing in Final Fantasy VII. Where you had that racing bit where you go up to that entertainment center planet bit where they're like a theme park and they're racing loads of chocobos there. I used to do that much.
Is it in the Phantom Menace racing scene as well? If they're not,
it's a bit like that, only it looks slightly more realistic than the Phantom Menace.
I don't know what you mean,
Keith. You wrote about it in two years ago.
2 years.
Yes, you were writing about Final Fantasy Brigade.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Coming to Mobage, or Mobbage, or whatever
Mobbage.
It is we've decided it's called Mobbage. Now. 2014, we still don't know what that is. I think like that series is really interesting from a historical perspective, but going back now, I can't imagine putting 60 hours into Final Fantasy V.
Like, well, funnily, I did go back. I got it on Android by something that rhymes with simulation. and I put about 16 hours into Final Fantasy VI, mainly through just like wandering around, sitting down, playing it for 10 minutes, and then putting it down again and picking it up over the course of the day. And I did that over like a period of months and managed to rack up a fairly decent time. Haven't got anywhere near finishing the thing yet, but I did do it nonetheless. And it suited it because these kind of games, you don't require fast reactions or anything. So the kind of slightly clumsy overlays, control overlays, doesn't really matter that much. Whereas if they try and translate a Twitch platformer or something, then you die horribly because the controls are rubbish. So I didn't mind it. It was quite good fun, and obviously it was simulating, so it looked proper. Still, if you want to get the new version, it's out now for $15.99, which I think is about £11.99.
This, I think, if you're a real journalist, you'd look this up before we started.
No, because it's not out yet. Well, it's not out now, is it? It's out tomorrow.
I'm sure you've looked up price comparisons. I don't. If you really cared about our listeners.
I know, you're making it. I guarantee it's like $11.99, $12.99.
Yeah.
that's what it is. Trust, mate.
You should work in a shop. Oh, it's like £10, £11. I don't know.
I would do extremely well. The customers would love me, and then I'd get fired after the first day. Yeah, so Final Fantasy V looking a bit weird. There you go. Finally today, I want to talk about... Oh, look, it's that thing we never talk about. In-app purchases. But we've got a reason this time, a proper reason, a legal reason. If you go way back last year to podcasts around about... I think it all started in 2012, possibly, when I wasn't even there, this court case. But it was certainly continued and apparently resolved in 2013, where some parents complained about in-app purchases that their kids had made, apparently without their permission, and they blamed Apple because they gave the password to the child and they thought that meant they could buy one in-app purchase. And there's this 15-minute window after you put in your password where you can just keep buying. And apparently the parents didn't know this and their kids bought everything in the App Store. And they got thousands of pounds worth of bills. And so they did this class action lawsuit where they all banded together and said, Apple, this is your fault, you con artist pig dogs. Give us all our money back. And Apple went, and they went to court and they said, all right, then we've come to an amicable resolution where you'll all get like £5 or $15 of like iTunes vouchers. There you go. That'll do, innit? Or the equivalent of $30 in a cash payment if you complained to them directly. That was a ruling, and that's the last we heard of it. Today, I think yesterday maybe, I don't know, the FTC got involved, the Federal Trade Commission.
They sound serious.
Yeah, they waded in and went, you know what, actually, that isn't good enough. Despite the fact the court case has been closed, we have decided that you actually are in breach of our Federal Trade Act thingy.
Mm-hmm.
And... you got to pay $32.5 million to aggrieved parents across the land.
A drop in the ocean.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. So that sounds like a very big number. To Apple, that is the change that they rummage around in their pockets and, you know, used to put in the meter when they're parking their 12 Ferraris. So, you know... to them. But they have still sort of complained. There was this little internal memo that was released. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's Tim Cook made contact with the rest of the company and said, yeah, well, we were doing all this stuff anyway, because we'll just pay it because, you know, who cares? We're Apple. And it doesn't really matter, does it? We've got $1 billion. The other thing that came as part of the ruling was that Apple had to change the way that they do business. They're being legally forced into changing the rules of the App Store, apparently.
Oh, do you know, Ayn Rand would have a massive problem with this, wouldn't she?
Ayn Rand had a problem with everything.
She did, grumpy old woman. Do you know, when you started talking about this, I thought, yeah, parents, do some better parenting, you jerks.
A lot of people echoed that sentiment,
And then you reminded me that there's that thing where... you put your password in and it's kind of valid for 15 minutes. I managed to buy a game accidentally over the Christmas break. Doing that exact thing. Yeah.
Get involved, Peter. $32.5 billion could be yours.
I might drop them a line and be like, oh, I bought a game by mistake. Oopsie. I thought I'd gotten away with it as well. It was expensive as well. It was a premium game.
My word. Not one of these free ones that you get for being an internet journalist.
No.
Balls.
But I understand it. It's only the US, isn't it? I mean,
this is US only.
And to be honest, the reason why they're peeved is because, as I remember, and we haven't written about this actually since on Biz because it was getting a bit dull.
Mm.
But they settled. I mean, the court case hadn't finished. They realised they were going to lose, and so they kind of offered an olive branch. Had they lost, actually, they might well have been hit with the kind of ruling they've now just been hit with.
Yeah.
So it was kind of quite... I mean, and then they get such good press, Apple, because at the time, all the American blogs went wild over this, and they got all this positive press for doing something that they were about... well, doing less than what they were probably about to be forced to do. So it's... yeah. I mean, I was the same. I'm always... when this comes up, this always comes up, you go to any industry conference, and there'll always be a panel or something about... free to play, increasingly kids and free to play, and what you do, and actually, I kind of get quite defensive and think, yeah, if you're a parent, you shouldn't be just giving your own phone or giving them their own phone with access to a bank account and expecting then Apple to pay up when they go and spend, you know, millions of pounds. But at the same time, the whole thing about in-app purchases came in so quickly, and I don't think anyone anticipated. It was just presumed, you know, when we first started writing about it, it was like when you could pay things with PayPal. It was just another option. There was going to be games that you downloaded didn't have to pay for at the beginning, and then you'd do this, that, and the other. And I don't think anyone anticipated that in-app purchases would be structured in the way they are, in that things are consumable, and you go back, and you go back, and you go back. Mm. And I do think maybe, you know, they're trying to do similar things over here, over there, dragging their feet over it, but it took a while for everyone to kind of catch up with what had actually changed. You know, when you actually change the way and how often people pay for things, then maybe you need some new laws to deal with that.
It did catch folks out, and to some degree I agree with people when they say, like, oh, you just should monitor your kids a bit better and don't give them passwords and keep an eye on what they're doing. But at the same time, I see people, certainly of the of older generations, like my parents, or, you know, even younger people in the sort of 40s, 50s, and, you know, they can work out the basics of the iPhone. They can make calls and they can do text messages.
You can make calls.
But apparently, I've never tried it myself, obviously. It's a bit leet. But apparently you can do that. So they can operate sort of the basic functions, but then, you know, they don't know this stuff. Mm. They wouldn't know that if you put password in, all right, then they wouldn't know what happened, because no one's read the terms and conditions. And it is only, and nowhere did it say, by the way, when you input this, there'll be 15 minutes where anyone can go mental on your account and buy whatever they like. There's no pop-up that tells you that. So how would they know?
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of on both sides. But apparently, according to Apple, they're not being forced into this change. They were doing it anyway, guys. Like, we were so doing that already. So whatever. Webs. Out and about this week, it's a brand new game, which is actually a really, really old game. Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition just went live on the Apple Store of games. You can get it for a stupidly large amount of money. I think it's about 10 quid, $15, something like that.
£10.49.
That's the one. And it is a direct port of A, Baldur's Gate 2, and B, all of the additional content packs that surrounded it. The names of which I don't know. It was, if you're not familiar, it's BioWare's, one of their early RPGs, BioWare of now Mass Effect, previously Jade Empire and all that, based on the D&D role-playing system. Second edition, I think, actually.
The Jade Empire is the game you go to. Not well, no, I was just tracing.
That was the one before Knights of the Old Republic. Yeah, right. I very clear, distinctly remember the box. So that's why I thought of it. Yeah, so it's based on the old D&D system. Very, very complicated, gooey, heavy, isometric, old-school RPG affair. Proper fantasy balls out. And regarded as one of the best fantasy RPGs around. We've reviewed it, and we don't like it. Matt Thrower reviewed it and gave it 6. Said that the game is still brilliant. It's, you know, awesome game and all the depth and tens of hours and engrossing and fantastic. It's all wonderful. Problem is, the same problem we had with the first Baldur's Gate iOS conversion, which is the control system isn't up to the task. They've had to dump all those boxes, all those hotkeys and everything on a keyboard. You don't have them, so you have to keep tapping. And what would be a right mouse click in order to go and, like, hover over something and see what it does, because there's so many different icons and objects and triggers and stuff that you can't necessarily immediately remember what they all do. You need to right click in order to see what they do. On the iPad, you have to push and hold, you know, wait for a second or two, and then it appears, which means that your game time is essentially doubled or tripled.
Oof.
And you're trying to find out what it does. So it's just a case of it being poorly optimized, which is a shame, because it's obviously a great game and everything. But we've given stern warnings to anyone who wants to do it.
Are you suggesting they didn't listen to us the first time around?
I'm flat out saying it.
And they went and pushed this game out, and they didn't even care what we'd said about it.
They didn't even consult us or anything. Not even.
I don't know why we do this job sometimes.
The thing is, though, like, again, it comes back to this Square Enix thing, isn't it? Like, I don't know how many people are going to need to hold a button down, because I think most people who buy it will know.
We'll have already completed it twice.
Yeah, yeah. They'll go, oh, brilliant, finally, some real games on iPad.
Like I used to play.
I used to play by myself when I was lonely and sad.
Not like now, though.
Not like now.
When I'm old and lonely, yeah. Sad.
Surrounded by my old games.
We turned into a Ray Winstone advert for betting.
I don't get that reference.
Well, you two don't watch television, do you? So you won't. But everyone else will.
Everyone else is in hysterics.
Exactly.
Lolcopters all round. Okay, so yeah, Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition, £10, not that good. Moving on to something that is both new and good, Shadowblade, which I have played. It is a platforming jump slashy ninja type game, and it's really quite sort of lovely. I've played it for a bit today. We've given it a gold award because it's right good. You'll like this, Peter. Okay. So you play a ninja person with your ninja sword and probably some throwing stars as well because he's a ninja. Mm-hmm. And you're legging it around on fairly small self-contained levels, which go left and right and do vertical stuff as well. So you're doing your wall jump and jumping on and slashing people and jumping up to another level. And it's really, really smooth. Beautiful frame rate. The art's lovely. It's not all dark and black and shinobi like. It's very, very colorful in a tasteful way. The character models and animations are really well done. And the controls, which obviously platformers, most important thing, it's one of the good ones. It's one of them good platformers like League of Evil that manages to do it well. You've got a choice of gesture and button based controls. And they both totally work. I'm really impressed. The gesture controls, you just hold either the left side or the right side of the screen to run in that direction, and you just swipe diagonally to jump, and it works. Takes a few seconds to get used to, but it's there. And the kind of classic left, right floating buttons and AB virtual buttons, they totally work as well. It's really responsive.
So is it more, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking Strider?
Yes, it kind of is a bit like that. That's a very old reference.
Strider or Mega Man?
Less Mega Man, I think. Okay. What's Harry say about it? It says, vibrant, fast-paced, special platformer that works perfectly on a touchscreen. And that is, you know, works perfectly on a touchscreen. That's the optimal part of that.
Right, so okay.
It's so difficult to get that sort of thing right, and only a few developers seem to get it on iPad or iPhone, anything touchscreen-based. And this one does. It's really good. I'm totally going to play more of it, and I'll be reviewing it tomorrow. So Shadow Blade, I think it's a couple of pennies. He opens the App Store smoothly. £1.49 or $1.99. Great ratings all round. Crack on. Magnetized, which, again, I've played a bit of.
This looks attractive.
Because about magnets, isn't it? Could have said repulsive as well.
Oh yeah. What else could we do?
I think that's it.
Looks like we'll be looking at both the positives and the negatives.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, you did.
Thanks.
These are so bad I didn't even realise what you were doing until just now.
You know a pun is good when you have to sit there and think about it. Quite a lot.
What are they talking about?
Yeah,
no, it's a way homer, that pun. On the way home, you'll be thinking about it and be like,
Okay.
We're
on the way. Yeah.
Anyway, Magnetized. It's a. Actually, what? I don't know how to describe this. It's a maze puzzle game, I guess. But I mean, it's all physics based, so I don't know. It's weird to categorize. Basically, you get presented with a maze on the screen. It goes off in a variety of directions. You're a black pixel that just floats straight down the middle of one of these corridors, at first anyway, but he doesn't change direction. There are other pixels, which are magnetized, stationed usually at the corners of the maze corridor or at other parts along, you know, around the screen. Touching your finger on the screen will activate the nearest magnet to your pixel, your floating pixel. So essentially what you need to do, the way I described it anyway, is you know that bit in the first Batman movie, right? Where he's zooming along the street and he fires a grappling hook out of the Batmobile and it wraps around a lamppost and lets him go round corners at full speed.
From the game? Yes, I do know that, yeah.
From the game, all right. Or from the movie, it's in the movie too. It's like that. The whole game is like that. So as the pixel approaches a corner, you have to press the screen and then it'll visually shoot out like a little magnetized, a line of magnetism will hit the pixel and then that'll cause it to change the direction. Alter the trajectory of the pixel, and then you have to let go at exactly the right time so that it will carry on down the next bit of the corridor. It is immediately playable, quite addictive, and tough as balls. It gets
balls.
Balls are so tough.
Balls get tough? They're quite the opposite, aren't they?
When do balls get tough? That's like a Vice headline.
You have to go to the doctor and say my balls aren't tough enough.
Yeah, and then they just hit it with a claw hammer until it sorts itself out.
Excuse me, could you take a look at these? I've been punching them all day and like...
And nothing.
Nothing.
Still as flimsy as an old sock. Rubbish.
That's not a nice image.
No. So it's very minimal style, kind of neon thing. People have referenced games like Pivot and Super Hexagon in terms of the difficulty and the minimalism of it all. It's good. Rob gave it a 7 out of 10, says it's not quite up there with those minimalist style, sort of, you know, classics like Super Hexagon, for example. But it's in the same ilk, and it's kind of a bit different, and it really is very challenging. So if you like those kind of puzzly weirdo games, then... I'd recommend it. Yes, weirdo. So Magnetize right now, £1.99 or $2.99. Last two, Across Age 2, which is apparently pulled from the generic book of JRPGs. This actually looks more like Final Fantasy V than the new Final Fantasy V does.
Yeah.
It's basically that thing we were talking about. So it's the sequel to Across Age, which is the storyline is based around time travel. So they're hopping between different times and trying to change the future or the past, or I don't know, something like that. It's a JRPG. People cry and
is it J though?
It's J.
Is it not J style?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? How do we categorise?
Well, I
thought SPG were German, so...
Okay.
I think JRPG is a genre, isn't it, in itself? Because there are certain things that Western RPGs do that JRPGs don't.
Yeah.
JRPGs have big eyes, don't they?
That's right. Either way, this looks like the developer went, wish I made Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, I know. It's that thing, Across Age, and it's like, yeah, well, we don't have Chrono Trigger on iOS. We do now, don't we? Do we?
Oh, it's been out for a while. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. At this point,
also, I think it's a bit more actiony than we're giving it credit. I think it's a bit like Zelda meets Chrono Trigger, which I'm assuming is how he pitched it.
Yes, Zelda likey. It looks exactly as you think it would look. That's a way to describe it. Everything we've just said is Zelda-like bit Final Fantasy, and it just does look like that. Look at the little lava tile that's been repeated over and over again.
I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, it's probably all right. I mean, I don't know.
If you're the sort of person who likes, who gets really excited whenever Kemco do another RPG.
I know. Kemco, which is every Thursday afternoon, they bust out another one of their, like, they get out the noun and verb machine and they come up with their new title of, like, I don't know, sweaty iron or closet
spin of the wheel
fish. Yeah, and it's just a new
closet fish.
It's just a new random title.
Oh my fish.
God. Oh my God, if somebody from Kemco or anybody who knows anybody at Kemco could convince them to make Closet Fish. Pitch Closet Fish. 10 out of 10. Guaranteed.
That is a story for the ages. Across Ages, that is, too, which you can get right now for £2.99 or $4.99 in HD. It's a bit cheaper if you go for SD, like a mug. You do that. Finally, today... See, this irritates me on so many levels.
Yeah.
So firstly, it's called Ferris Mueller's Day Off, right? And again, we're going to bitch about the olden days, like grumpy old 20-somethings.
Weren't they good, though?
Weren't they good? Ferris Mueller's Day Off is probably my favorite John Hughes movie. A lot of people like Breakfast Club, and some people even like 16 Candles. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is clearly the best, and the best thing Matthew Broderick ever did.
Yep.
And they've done a game which is based on all 80s movie genres, so it's taking a wee stab at your Breakfast Club and your Back to the Future and all that stuff, and Star Wars and everything else, really, just loads of movie references, which when it's done well can be all right, I guess. But when it's done badly, it's just kind of cringeworthy. And Mark reviewed this and said during the entire thing, he laughed once. Which might be one more time than I laugh. I don't know. I've seen it running and I'm just... Although, if you do get it, we've got guys up on the site. Because he didn't want to play it and just do the review and waste all that time not laughing. So he's done a big guide for it.
So here's a guide for a game we recommend you don't play.
Yeah, exactly.
Check it out, guys.
Be the best.
This is how the web works.
If you want the experience to be like as short as possible, we've got you covered.
Well, the thing is, what he says is the actual puzzles are actually good. The way the gameplay is tuned and everything, that works well. But apparently the cartoon art and humor around it is, to quote him, atrocious.
Mm.
So there's something there underneath, but it's just trying to be funny and a bit
he's giving it a 6. It's not obviously not a car crash. But...
No, he said that fundamentally the mechanics of the game are good. Mm. It's just that the way it's wrapped and packaged and theme is really bad, and it's cringeworthy and not funny and all that.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way in that it feels like it's deliberately pulling on certain strings, like it's deliberately trying to evoke certain feelings in a very...
Well, weren't Penny Arcade doing that for a while with that Saturday morning?
Oh, yeah.
Weren't they doing that for... Yeah. I never played it, but I just heard about it. And...
I don't know. Do you know, Glitch Games is such a weird company. Like, half the stuff they do is really good, and half the stuff is like,
Yeah, yeah. Some of them are like day and night. Like Crescent Moon, generally. I quite like a lot of what...
Yeah, same there, yeah.
But occasionally you get this just complete dud. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that sort of came from nowhere. But can't all be gold, I suppose.
Exactly. And hopefully the next one will be much, much better.
Exactly. So, but in the meantime, if you do want to play it, you can grab it right now. It costs... Oh, there's an iPhone and iPad version. Oh, I hate it even more now. Oh, for crying out. All right, then. I'm not clicking on both. The iPad version, is 69p. And there must be a money off thing going on at the moment. So that's the SD version. These links are wrong.
We are rubbish.
Yeah. None out of 10 for Pocket Gamer there.
Ugh.
So it I think it's 69p, 99 cents, or it's a couple of quid if you buy the iPad version. And the game shouldn't be doing that. Everything should be universal. Go away.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Here we are again, once again, properly again this time. All of us in the room wherein lies the throne of games. I've had the cleaners in. It's nice and tidy now. We've got rid of those corpses that stacked up over Christmas. Apparently, they decided to use it as some kind of hostel thing for the disenfranchised, which I was all for until they accidentally got locked in when I put the key in the lock and turned it. And then they all stopped living. But it's all right. We've shuffled it all out now, and the police have left, and it's fine.
It's a simple mistake to make.
At least now the other corpse is in the other corner.
Exactly. I'll deal with those later. But in the meantime, it's free and open and spacious and airy and ready to hear about games from this week. Specifically, Peter.
Yes. I've been playing two games. I played them over the holidays, and it's become a bit of a tradition. I played Sonic 1 and 2, the remasters, I guess. That are available on iPhone.
Just to clarify, these are the games that were released and remastered, but one of them had a missing level or something. Added or whatever.
Yeah. So when Sega originally released the iPhone version of Sonic the Hedgehog, it was naff. And so then they got a guy who threatened to do a proper version of it illegally. They just got him in to do the proper version.
It was naff because of controls and stuff, wasn't it?
But it wasn't just that. It was stuff like there would be like slowdown.
Yeah, it was slow, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a naff port.
Like ultra awful port. So Sonic 2 came out at the end of 2013, and consequently Sonic 1 went on sale. So I got both. And do you know, I forgot how good the first Sonic the Hedgehog is.
Yeah, yes. That gets overlooked, doesn't it?
It really does get overlooked. It's a much slower game than people remember it being, and it's all the better for it.
Sonic takes a long time to start moving, doesn't he? If he ever stops, that kind of really slow whoop, whoop, whoop before he gets going.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, well, as a default, the new spin dash, which has been added back into the first game, which wasn't previously there, that's set on. So you can you can do spin dashes from the off in Sonic 1. And it means it actually, it speeds things up enough to the point that you don't feel frustrated that you're trying to get enough momentum down a hill. Right. Like, he doesn't feel like a tank almost.
Okay.
But largely, it's been kind of left to its own devices. So yeah, it's basically the 16-bit version of Sonic the Hedgehog. And then as you complete it, you unlock Tails and Knuckles to play through it as well. And I don't believe Knuckles has ever been in the game. Like, I don't think you've ever been able to use Knuckles.
Or in Sonic 1?
Mm.
No.
Not even with that Knuckles pack, I don't think. So, you know, it's a platformer. You run about from area to area, jumping on levels and...
Are you really explaining Sonic the Hedgehog?
I don't know. The thing is... But the thing,
amazing.
But the thing
no,
is...
carry on.
I don't... I'm constantly concerned about this kind of talk. Because you and I... Well, in fact, all three of us, we know what Sonic the Hedgehog is.
Yeah.
But like that weird kid who, well, he's not weird. He's a lovely kid.
One is looking through your window.
The one who's looking through the window. Like at that his age, I probably was playing Sonic the Hedgehog. But you know, I don't think he probably knows what it is. So I don't know. I don't know whether or not Sonic is part of our universal language at the moment. But it's a Sonic the Hedgehog game and it works very well. Touchscreen stuff doesn't feel quite as well implemented as Sonic CD. I seem to remember. The bosses are really good and you have to be really thoughtful. I like the fact that you can go through different areas and get, like, it's much more obvious that different routes are available through the game and secrets are there. And I'm really positive about it. What I'm really not positive about is Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Like, the first... I seem to remember that being amazing, but the first few stages are brilliant, and then the level design just falls off a cliff. They start adding all of these additional elements and really frustrating enemies. Like, Keith, do you remember those little stars that detonate and then they shoot stuff out?
Yeah.
Like, I cannot imagine having played the original, getting to that stage and dying because of them and not thinking, well, I'm going to throw this in a drain. Like, like, it's absolutely infuriating.
It's very hard.
But it's unfair almost. There's sequences in Sonic the Hedgehog 2. It's the first time I think in the series where it does this, where you're running so fast that you end up just running off of something and you die because you simply couldn't see it coming.
Never run fast, Pete. Never run fast in Sonic.
But in Sonic the Hedgehog 2, I think it encourages you to run more.
Oh, it always encourages you to run. This is the mistake, though. Anyone who was ever obsessed with it, as I was, and would go through and not want to lose a single life and would want as many continues and blah, blah, blah as possible, you always go through at snail's pace. You take it step by step and you map that level out in your head. It was always the idiots you'd get come around from school who'd go running, try and do it in 30 seconds, get a team on Games Master, and would die. You know, because Sonic was always, it was never death drops, but it was always run at your peril. Because if you run, it's set up. There's going to be a thing stood there that's going to, you know, you're going to run into it, or there's going to be a trap. You know, you always go really slowly, and that's what was always the best. Because you know, this is in the days where you couldn't save, and you'd take the day off school genuinely. To complete Sonic 2, and you're playing it with your brother, and you're going through level after level, and you are almost shaking because you get to a level you've not got to before, and you don't know what happens. Yeah. What you know, and it's just, that's what you want it to be. You know, you want it to be, and Sonic 2 is ridiculously hard, actually. Unless you're an absolute geek, last hour is hard. It's just hard, and it's unforgivingly hard, but it's brilliant. Because you want it to be that hard. You know, you want it to be a thing where you know that if you make one mistake, you are gone. You know, you've got to do it again. And then you think, oh, I've got to do this again.
Keith, who has organized fun, where all the kids would come round and then try and run with Sonic as if you do that.
They would never get, all those people would never get beyond Chemical Plant in Sonic 2. That's all they'd ever seen of that game. They'd get
but that's all you need to do. That's all you need to get to in Sonic 2.
You got to get it to Casino. You got to get to Casino Night. You know, that is Sonic 2 Casino.
That is brilliant.
Oh yeah, that's good too.
That is a brilliant. I don't know. I guess the game, because it is so old. You know, it's from a period where there wasn't the guided tutorial. There wasn't the hand holding menu that comes up and goes, now remember, you don't want to run too fast. And because of that, because I'm encouraged to, because it's my first time really playing through the latter half of that game because I was rubbish at it, you know, it never quite teaches you that. How to do that. But as a port, like if you want to go back and experience those games with the advice that you've just heard from Keith the Hedgehog Andrew, like they are brilliant ways of doing it. They
and it's
are
got
absolutely
Hidden Palace in it as well.
And it does have Hidden Palace. Yeah, I never got to that because I couldn't. I got to the end boss and it just wiped me out every time. And I just thought, do you know what? No.
But you know, you remember it, like back in the day, there was a magazine called Sega Excess, which was like a cheap magazine, and they would have like a month or two after it had come out, never at launch. They would have where they had taken a screenshot of every single part of the level, and it would map it out into this big. Yeah. And they were, that was good. Like that was gold. That was like, yeah. Oh my god! If I go down there, I can get that. And
it sounds so old. This is awful. Mooning over bloody Sonic.
You'd have Tails coming over saying, "If you want to jump down, you can jump down there and get those rings."
Yeah, screw Tails. But you would recommend these remakes in their current state, then, would you?
I would.
You would. Good stuff. All right. Cool. I'll go next then. Why not? I want to talk about a game from the actual present.
When's it set?
Oh, yeah. Good point. All right, then. A game that takes place in World War II. But it was made, like, last week, so shut up. It's relevant.
Yep.
It's called Battle Supremacy, and it is essentially a tank combat game, which is really, really not my cup of tea. I don't like war shooters, and I don't give a toss about military vehicles. So, you know, this kind of thing is supposed to be like tank porn for people, where it's like, oh, there's a Panzer, and you could tell cause it's got the special tracks on it. Oh, I don't give a crap about all that. And to be honest, I'm not big into war simulations because I think it's all in a bit of a bad taste. Saying that, I quite liked Battle Supremacy. It was kind of fun. First of all, I mean, it's very arcadey. This comes from the company who do Sky Gamblers. This is a pairing between Atypical Games and I forget the name of the other developer, sorry. But they are known for their Sky Gamblers games, which are a bit more simmy. They got a bunch of buttons on screen to control pitch and yaw and all that sort of stuff, and open wing flaps and all that kind of crap. This is not that. They've gone to ground, but they've decided to streamline it. So basically, it's sort of virtual sticks, which you can't really see, of just moving the tank around with your left and controlling the movement of the gun turret with your right thumb. And that's pretty much it. There's a very, very, very generous auto lock, which kind of just snaps the turret to the nearest thing. You can move and control it, and there's also a zoom if you want to manually go in and adjust. But generally speaking, you're kind of just, you know, flicking it left to move to the next tank that's on screen, and just spamming the fire button to blast them. What's impressive is the levels are quite big. They go over a variety of different environments, so you're in your kind of woody, when you get into mainland kind of France, you're trundling all around there, seeing some French cities. You've got the beaches, obviously you've got to do the Normandy landing thing, so there's all that. There's some really, really cold bits where it all looks a bit icy. It's three campaigns, you end up in France and Russia and all that. I had a thought when I was playing, I was like, why do I like this? Because generally I don't like this kind of game. I think it's a bit icky. But something about the arcadey nature of it and something about the fact that it's tanks makes you depersonalize it somewhat, because you can't see anyone dying.
Right. Okay.
They're Which trapped is perhaps, inside.
Well, yeah, it's perhaps not a good thing to concede, and I'm not saying it makes it any better, and I still don't really like War Sims, but I wasn't that guy running around sniping dudes in the head. You're just a machine, and it gives you that feeling of like, I'm almost like I'm playing Micro Machines or Toy Soldiers or something, you know, because you're just trundling around and snapping to a tank, which for all I know has got no one in it. Could be one of those rogue sentient tanks that you get.
That's why we won the war, isn't it? They didn't put anyone in their tanks.
It's almost got like a robot feel. In my modern head, I'm kind of making them mechs or something, like remote control mechs. And it depersonalizes it. And it's got this strangely upbeat vibe for a war game, is what kind of struck me. It's very bombastic, kind of score, which is giving it the full orchestral stuff. And there's never a dull moment, and you're trundling along and straight over trees and you're blasting away stuff. Very kind of basic arcadey stuff. And I can stomach that a little bit better, I suppose, in the really, really gritty, let's take this very seriously war sim, because that's sort of like, ugh, this is feeling a little bit close to real life, and in real life this is horrible, and I'm not really, I don't want to be emulating this. But it worked, it works surprisingly well on iPad. There are, I should mention, a couple of bits where you do actually get into a boat and get into a plane. So there are brief excursions into water and air-based combat, which is kind of brief, and it's not very deep or anything, but it just changes the scenery, and it's a bit of a lark while you're doing it. But no, decent-sized battlefields, the controls are nice and streamlined, variety in the fights, and funnily enough, the multiplayer mode is really quick and easy to use, and genuinely works. It was like the easiest lobby I've been in for ages. So all that is a pretty solid recommendation. I think it's got bumped right to the front of the App Store now on the recommended pages, and I think we gave it an 8, a silver. I gave it a 4 out of 5. Yeah, I'd recommend it, which I don't think I've ever done to a war game.
So I take it you're playing as the Allies?
Yes. Yes, rarely. That would be like, you know, playing as Darth Vader.
Well, you do get PC tactics where you play as the Germans because their tanks were better. They just didn't have as many of them.
It's a bit weird, though, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's weird.
It's a bit weird.
But, I mean, you get games where you play as the Russians, and, you know, they weren't especially nice guys either.
They weren't. They weren't nice, but in comparison to Nazis...
It's a fine line. I wouldn't say they were any...
The fine line between Russians and Nazis.
It pretty much was. It was, you know... They were,
so that's not being invited back to Moscow anytime soon.
Oh, no, they're not there now, are they?
So, Keith, take us out of this first proper group podcast of 2014. What you been playing?
I've been playing Closet Fish on
an out of 10.
Already made. Well done, Kemko.
How long did it take you to get the fish to admit that it was a fish?
Is that the aim? Oh, I've been doing something else.
Oh, I assume so.
I've been playing it wrong.
You got into the closet with the fish, didn't you?
I've been doing two things this week. I've been kind of in a traditional manner, I've been playing Broken Sword 5 on PS Vita, giving the PS Vita a run out, and playing. I'm literally,
it's biannual.
Yeah,
flicking the on switch, see if it still works.
I'm about an hour in, maybe not even that. I like to play these games slow. Anyone who doesn't know, Broken Sword is a point and click. In my view, the point and click, but a point and click series, and this is the latest one, and it's weird because I played the original, I played them all, but I played the original the most, and I played it to death. But yeah, this definitely captures it, and it's weird that the soundtrack and everything, even though the kind of the landscapes you play out in are drawn in the same way, but George and everyone are slightly 3D on top of it. I'm not sure it quite works. I think I would prefer them had they been drawn, but I don't know if that's just me looking at it in a kind of remember how it used to be kind of way, and whether anyone who hadn't played any of them before would think that. But the attention to detail and the script, it could run straight on from all the others. It just feels like exactly what they do all the time, Broken Sword. It's slightly witty, slightly serious, slightly historical. There is a hint system, which I'm always slightly against, because the very first Broken Sword, when it came out, I had got stuck on several parts of that for days, where you just have to sit and think, well, what could I possibly do that I haven't done? What if I put that item with that item, or I go and say that to that person? You know. Yeah. Whereas this, there is a kind of three-tiered kind of hint system. But I suppose you have to cater for that these days, because otherwise on mediums like handhelds, people would just think, oh, I'm not playing that anymore, I can't get any further. The brilliant thing about Broken Swords is they feel timeless. They could be from any time, really, both set and made. It isn't restricted by the platform or anything like that. This could have been made back at the time of the original, and likewise, the original could have been made now. They kind of all feel the same. So I'm looking forward to playing more of that. It's impressed me so far.
Good stuff.
The other thing I've been doing, in a similar vein to the other week, where I think I talked about the Vita linking up with PS4 and how that was quite interesting. Right. I've been doing the same thing. I've got a loaned Xbox One here. I've been using it in a similar manner. It's quite interesting because you play your PS4 games on the Vita and it feels completely right. And you think, God, aren't Microsoft fools for not doing something similar? Because essentially, the only kind of link up with tablets and phones on Xbox One is Smart Glass. And it's very swish and it works. But essentially, it is kind of just a different way of controlling the television.
Mm.
put you can do all kinds of things, like you can push videos onto it. You know, if you've got a Surface or you've got a phone, you can push like YouTube videos onto it. Anything you're kind of doing video wise or music wise, you can push onto your television quite easy, and it will come through your Xbox One, and that's all very swish. But you can't push any games. So I was playing the Halo game on Surface, and I was thinking it would be logical now if I could push this onto the telly, and you can't. It blocks it. Yeah, maybe because that game is available to buy on there. But then the Xbox One is very different, and it feels like it is a smart TV, really, essentially. It wants you to... It doesn't want to be plugged into your television. It wants your television to be plugged into it. And it's a key difference, really, because you put it in and you plug your digital box into it, or whatever you use, your Skybox, and it really does change the way you watch television. You're talking to television to turn the volume up and volume down, and you're able to do other things while the television's still streaming, and it does make a subtle difference, things like that. You can flip around, and then you think, actually, what they're doing is, yeah, there's going to be link-ups with mobile and stuff, but it is more of a smart TV play, because these whole smart TV things haven't taken off, and people aren't engaged in them, whereas this...
No, the first wave didn't do great.
Yeah, I mean, the irony is that everyone's buying these smart TVs now. You can't really not buy a smart TV if you can't buy a television now, but they're completely unaware that that's what they're buying, and they're not interested in having Facebook on their television, really. YouTube maybe has a route in there, but otherwise it isn't engaging.
Netflix, really. They've got the Netflix.
Yeah, but then to be honest,
so that's it.
I have Netflix on bloody everything I own.
Exactly.
So it's like, I expected to be more disappointed with it because it doesn't do the interesting things that Sony is doing with PlayStation now. Xbox just doesn't do that, but it is a completely different play. And I can... I've been plugging my PS4 into it and playing PS4 games through the Xbox because it's quite cool to be able to be playing that. And then in the same screen, I can have Forza downloading the latest update or something like that. It feels like a very intuitive thing that they've thought people's televisions are boring. And it really does lift your television. But it's interesting because, especially from a mobile perspective, they're both completely different from each other. And it's this generation more than any other, I think it's entirely valid to own both. And if you've got one, there are things you're missing out on the other because they are so different. They might both have FIFA and they might both have this, that and the other, and they've got apps that you can control them with. But they are completely different perspectives on where gaming is heading. And I don't think either of them are wrong. I think they're both kind of right. And I suspect within the next 5 years, the more they integrate with these things, the more that we'll all be forced to buy both because they're surprisingly kind of little... They're unique, really. They're not like each other at all. So it's been an eye-opening few months, actually, looking at these things.
Well, the question I really want to ask out of all this is, who keeps giving you these next-gen consoles?
Well, I've just sent them back. But, you know, I've got, because I wrote a piece about the PS4 and the Vita that was really quite interesting, and so I wanted to write in the interest of fairness, a similar one on Xbox. So, I managed to get a loan from Microsoft for a month to do that. So... There shall be an article going up at some point about all this in a slightly more tailored way to what I've just rambled on for 5 minutes.
Presumably dictated to the Xbox, which then prints it out for...
Well, you know, it's not hard...
And pushes it to your mobile.
It's not hard to imagine that happening. And actually, this is what's weird. There have been so much bad press about Kinect and the speech control.
Yeah.
I can name on one hand the time it hasn't done what I wanted it to. It's amazing. It does these sound tests around your... wherever you're playing it, and it learns what is normal ambient noise and isn't you, and what direction it's coming from and what is you. And you can have the television up incredibly loud and you just say very calmly, Xbox, go to TV, and it does it. And I can only think that the people are having trouble with it have either moved the television or changed speakers, or they've you only have to move the position of it and it tells you need to do the calibration again, because it's incredibly precise. It's listening for the noise that it knows are in certain places all the time. And if you move it, then that obviously mucks all that up. But if you do it right, if you do the setup right, it's really impressive. It's got things wrong about twice. It hasn't heard me once, and it went to the... I told it to go to Forza and it went to something else. But apart from that, it's...
Perhaps it was just ignoring you.
Well, you did. Yeah, it is watching me. But
yeah, it's right now.
I quite like that idea.
You've been doing sexy dances for your Xbox.
Always, yeah.
Oh, it's good stuff. All right, then. Well, that had something sort of to do with mobile, a bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Doesn't really matter anyway. Well, good stuff. Go team, Pocket Gamer podcast. I'm imagining... I actually put my fist out then, as if we were all in the room, to do like a group fist
bump.
You
need to see someone, I think.
I do, but no one's there. Oh, well, I'll just settle for a bye, everybody. Bye. It was really good to talk to you again and that. And come join us next week for another episode of the podcast. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.